Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
And welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is a show where we usually get people from different parts of the world, different environments, cultures, people who have different opinions to come and tell us what they think of the news that's been happening in the last month. But we often do special episodes, and on those we focus on one specific topic. This is one such specific topic episode, which is also kind of a long-standing series, because this is the fifth episode in the Brexit saga, where we go to the United Kingdom and friends or neighbors who are not necessarily friends all the time, and talk about what the hell is happening. Bart is laughing. He knows what I'm talking about. We talk about all of that. Before, I'm Patrick Beja, by the way. Hi, I'm the host. Before we jump into this, I do want to thank the patrons of this show, the people who support the show financially, because I feel, you know, on all my other shows, I thank everyone very profusely all the time. I feel I don't do this as much on this show. Maybe it's because it's a little bit more serious. But I, at least every once in a while, I want to take a second to acknowledge and appreciate the support that I get for doing this show, because it's not an easy one. You know, I'm someone who talks about games and tech for a living, and maybe that's why, you know, I have a different approach to international news, because it's not something I'm bathing in all the time. But I think the show is not super easy for me to do, and I've mentioned it here and there, and sometimes I wonder if I, you know, should keep doing it. And if I, like, I definitely have an urge to do it, so I don't think I'm going to stop. But the support I get, especially on Patreon, it's not just about the money. Obviously, I'm very happy to take the money. If you want to give me more, I won't say no. I'm not one of those people. But it's also about the fact that it means that what we do here, which is probably different from most of the things you can find on the internet and in news media, what we do here matters, right? It's worth, or at least it's worth your hard-earned cash, but the intent of supporting it. And I'm not trying to say this to encourage more of you to support the show. I'm really saying those who do, I'm incredibly thankful for, and I think maybe I don't say it enough. And the reason I say that about many things, but I think really the reason I do it, I keep doing this show, is in higher part because I know that there are people who appreciate and think what we do here is worth it. So, yeah. So I just wanted to say that. And now, to illustrate this, one of the core principles of the show is that we get people who don't necessarily agree with one another to talk and listen to one another. Not convince, but at least listen to one another. And in this case, we have people from different parts of the United Kingdom and friends. And you know what? Let's start with the friend from Ireland. Bart, how are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. I am looking at the sunshine and ignoring all the news about small viruses.
Yes, which is big viruses are fine. We can see them and shoot them with guns. The small ones are the annoying ones. We also have, who's on this show? Bruce from the land of the Scots. How's it going, yeah. Bruce?
Yeah, I'm surprisingly... Oh, the sun's gone. Okay, it was out.
That was great. That was summer, wasn't it?
Summer, yeah. I got excited because it was out. Yeah, I'm, you know, how can we be doing? We're leaving the EU. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Yeah, BlizzCon got cancelled. What else do we need?
You know, when I say this show is difficult to do, it's especially true this year. Like sometimes I'm just like, what the F? Like, am I gonna more? Viruses, more. But I do think it's important and to soldier on.
We don't want to say it's not going to get any worse, do we? Because we thought that. You know,
all right, I talk about this in a second, but I'm really hopeful for 2021. Maybe not for you guys. you guys are screwed. But for the rest of the world, there is hope, I think. I might do an editorial about this because I think it's really easy to lose sight of what might happen next year. And, you know, on the positive side, maybe we don't lose sight of what might be negative, although it's difficult to imagine. Like maybe there's going to be, I don't know, aliens invading or... the AI taking over. One of my favorite is California sinking in the San Andreas Fault, which is technically possible. You know, it's not like it's not. Anyway, we also have Alex from the land of the Welsh. How's it going, Alex?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you. Not too bad. I've got a little bit of sunshine here. It's still sticking around at the moment. It's a similar situation here in Wales, I think, to everywhere else. We did get criticized by Donald Trump in a tweet, so we must be doing something right. About COVID response, so it's not too bad.
He criticize you for?
He was talking about how our response to COVID's been terrible and how we're like doing really badly, even though our numbers aren't actually that bad, especially in comparison to the rest of the UK. So I have no idea.
Well, that's not doing. A high bar to clear, and I say that as, you know, a French person who's also getting like heat for the numbers. They're not great, but yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So, but I'm equally devastated that BlizzCon has been cancelled this year. Very, very upset about that. But that's life. But yeah, other than that, just I think the weird phrase at the moment is I'm surviving, which I guess is the main thing right now.
For now.
Yeah, for now. And I saved the best for last. Obviously, the true representative of the best of the United Kingdom, the English member of this panel, Gareth from England. How's it going, Gareth?
I think I'm supposed to be saying the opposite to everybody else. So I think, yeah, the sun is definitely shining here. I love COVID. being locked down is fantastic. And I am so happy that BlizzCon was cancelled.
That's going too far. I'm sorry. It's not funny.
It's just rude.
Just rude.
For those who don't know, Gareth is the bravest amongst us because he is the pro-Brexit representative on the show. I think, Alex, aren't you kind of on the fence a little bit? Can't even remember.
I'm not really on the fence. I've never really been pro-Brexit, but it's one of the things where I'm getting more apathetic over time, it seems.
So you're not enraged all the time. Mutual. Yeah.
No, definitely not enraged by all the some of the things we've done recently. It's quite questionable, but I guess we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we're going to get to it pretty soon, actually. And, you know, we try to keep the show lighthearted but serious. I don't know if it works. Like, it's not like we don't make all the news a joke, which I think some commentators do, which I think isn't helpful. We joke around the news, but also when we talk about serious stuff, we try to be serious. And so the last on the last episode previously on the Brexit saga, it was back in February of this year. It feels like a lifetime ago. February 12th was the publishing date of the episode. And it was a few weeks before I was supposed to go to Japan and had to cancel the trip literally in the airport after having gone through security because we realized that COVID was taking hold in the country. And I don't know, it feels like everyone's been saying that about 2020, but it feels like 15 years ago. I don't even remember what had happened. Essentially, it was everything was set. Everything was settled, things were going to happen at the end of October, and the agreements were agreed upon, and things were going to happen. And Brexit was happening with an agreement with the EU. I feel like I should go to someone who's not head deep in the situation, and maybe the Irish person who's looking over at the Republic of Northern Ireland and looking what's happening there to tell us. I don't know if you want to be the one to summarize the things that have been happening in the last few months, Bart. Tell me if you don't. But a few weeks ago, Boris Johnson was like, hell no, we're not going to do it like that. And I didn't understand why or like what happened.
Well, to some extent, that's a bit of a mystery to everyone. We had the agreement. It was going to be a somewhat weird situation where Northern Ireland was going to be sort of in and sort of out of the customs union. And, you know, the Northern Ireland Protocol, as it was called. And it had taken a lot of negotiating, but it was, you know, a good old-fashioned fudge, but it seemed workable. And then out of the blue, they decided to publish a bill in Parliament in Westminster to basically give themselves the right to ignore the international treaty that entered into. And that's just thrown the whole thing up in the air to the point where it's not clear how you negotiate with someone who doesn't abide by their own agreements.
So what did that bill pass or did it not pass?
I'll defer to my UK colleagues on that, but I don't believe it's all the way through the process yet.
Yeah,
it gets through the Lords now, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think the understanding was that it was changed slightly so that it would now come down to an MP's agreement on when to pull the plug on it. So it's now up to MPs to actually pull the plug if they wanted to go ahead with this at any point in the future, I think was my understanding.
So they've given themselves the right to break an international treaty later.
That is the gist of what I've been reading, yes.
Interesting approach.
So...
From the Irish point of view, right, at the moment, there's still negotiations going on to try get to a trade deal, because that's what really worries us here. I grew up living on the border with Northern Ireland, and that is a very integrated, like, there's no difference between someone who lives on the south or the north of that border. And an awful lot of companies, as part of making whatever they make, there will be 5 or 6 border crossings, right? You imagine you get raw materials in, they come up through the border, then you send it down to be finished in some other place, it goes down through the border again, then it comes back up to you, and then you sell it out, and God knows where it goes then. So that whole area there is built around this concept that stuff can move across that border without issue. And that is going to vanish in a puff of logic on the 1st of January. So what we hear is radio ads. Like this morning, I was just thinking about this podcast. There was an ad from the Irish government saying, if you have a UK driver's license, exchange it for an Irish license before the end of the year, or it'll be illegal for you to drive. There's free courses for companies to train up customs experts within their company so they can fill in the paperwork. There's ads telling you how to register to become an international exporter. Because anyone trading outside of the Republic now it's an international export. And even if there is a trade deal, it's still an international export. It may be at no tariffs, but it's still, you got to register for a number.
But
and
this
so
is...
The radio is full of ads as if this is going to collapse in a heap. And that we had a new budget today for next year, was published today. And the budget is built on 2 assumptions. COVID will be with us for most of next year, and there will be a hard Brexit.
Wow. So all of those ads, just to be clear, are because people think that the agreement is not going to hold.
Well, even if the agreement does hold, the driver's license thing is still going to happen. Even if the agreement does hold, the custom stuff still has to happen. You still have to be registered. It might be zero tariff you have to pay, but you still have to file all the paperwork.
Hmm.
So Brexit is, like, the UK is leaving the common trade area, whether it's leaving the common trade area with WTO rules or whether it's leaving the common trade area with you know, agreed no tariffs, but it is leaving. So on a paperwork point of view, it's exports now.
So yeah, that isn't impacted by, or I guess in some way, but that would have happened no matter what happens with the kerfuffle that Boris Johnson created a few weeks ago. Right.
You are correct. Yes. The question is, will there be someone standing on that border blocking the traffic, or will it be the open border envisaged by that agreement where, yes, there's paperwork, but that paperwork... So basically, if the agreement stays in place, it's an on-paper border, right, where the two companies involved file the paperwork online and the lorries just drive across the border. But if this completely collapses and if the EU draw a hard line and say, well, we have to protect our borders from, you know, streams and streams of UK stuff pouring across, then there's going to be men standing on the border of the Republic of Ireland stopping stuff coming in from Northern Ireland. And that would be, that is the nightmare scenario.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to switch to Gareth. You tried to put a couple of words in earlier. Do you know what happened with Boris Johnson? My question.
Not really. I think as Alex said, really, I don't think anybody really quite knows what's gone on. I've been very much staying away from the news, and I'll be, you know, dead straight and honest. I realize this is a program where you deal a lot with the news and with current affairs, and obviously that's a big part of what's going on, but I've been staying away from the news because it's just depressing.
Yeah. I think we do that, and we also, another really important part is getting the feelings of the people who are on the ground. And I think people who can't, not being able to deal with it anymore, is also part of that, you know, reaction we want to know about.
Yeah, and again, you know, and the original premise of me being here, you know, in my head was a lot to do with the fact that I am not a political person. I do not keep completely up to date on all of this sort of stuff. I am a sort of standard, average, ordinary person on the street. So I was thinking about this last night, thinking, well, I don't really know exactly what's going on with some of this stuff. Should I do a load of research? And I kind of thought, well, that sort of defeats the object of sort of my purpose, I feel.
Well, I mean, in your day-to-day life, is it even making the news in the UK? Like, if you listen to the 3-minute morning headlines at 8 o'clock in the morning, is Brexit even on the agenda in the UK?
Well, I mean, I've just sort of in setup to actually, you know, sit here and talk to you guys, have gone to the BBC homepage, BBC News homepage, and it's all about COVID.
Yes, yeah, so I've been checking in a bit more frequently with the news, and it made a splash about half a week when this happened, and that was about it. Other than that, like, every single article has been about COVID pretty much for like the past like 6-7 months.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I've been avoiding it.
And like, the trade talks are happening like now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's how it happened for us as well. Looking at the news, it was 2-3 weeks ago. Boris Johnson going like, we don't want it. And then the EU saying, well, all right, then hard Brexit it is. And then it disappeared. So I was like, wait, is it like, was there a vote that didn't happen? But, okay,
Patrick, what's been going on since in parallel to that, right? So that made the news, right? That bizarro bit of legislation. But what's also been going on is actual negotiations between the EU's team and Boris Johnson's team on the future relationship. So those talks are happening like literally now, and they've been going on for weeks.
That's what I was going to get to. Can this be a hardball negotiating tactic where Johnson was like, well, I'll throw everything up in the air, so come back to the negotiating table and we can talk about it more, you know, to get more for the UK. I'm trying to, you know, see the positive Brexiter side of things here. And just to be clear, because there was a deadline at the end of October, and this is why we're doing this now. I don't even remember what it was, but there was a deadline now in a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, that's for the deal to be agreed.
Yeah, the ministers have to sign off. The Council of Ministers have to sign off on whatever trade deal is done. So they're going to be meeting at the end of this month.
So,
and right now, there's no paper for them to put their name on.
But what if Boris Johnson is playing 4D chess? Okay, it's not even like it's not even 4D chess. It's just like he tried one last time to get a little bit more for the country, and he's going to sign it anyway. Isn't that the reason for the kerfuffle? It could be.
For what it's worth, my pet theory, right? There's negotiations going on, and we're hearing nothing. That means that they're not leaking. That implies to me they're actually achieving something, because if they weren't, they'd be leaking like a sieve.
Right, to try and influence public opinion, to push
to try and influence public opinion. So the fact that they're negotiating silently implies that there actually is a chance we get this thing across the line.
I think the opposite. I think they're not saying anything. They're keeping radio silence because they know that it's not going well, and they are playing for a no deal. I still think they're playing for a no deal.
Well, I would aim.
Sorry?
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I would kind of back what he's saying as well. There's been some recent articles recently saying progress hasn't been fantastic that I was reading just earlier, just to try prep for the show. For me, this feels kind of a bit like, I don't think this would have happened in a non-COVID world. I think Boris Johnson's trying to play a card that he couldn't play in any of his scenario, because right now you could probably get away with more bad faith politics, because as you said quite rightly, it just doesn't hit the news really that often. It lasted half a week. He's looking at breaking international law. If that came out any other time period, like that I can remember, that would have been across headlines for months and months, the amount of damage that would cause. And right now, he just gets away with it.
I still don't understand exactly what happened. The agreement that was signed at the beginning of last year was for the large principles of the agreement, and there was still negotiation, and it had to be signed at the end of this month. What was agreed upon at the beginning of the year, if they still have to reagree upon it at the end of October?
Okay, that's an easy one to answer, Patrick. Okay. So what was agreed upon was how to leave Europe.
Okay.
What is under negotiation now is the trade agreement that will exist between an independent United Kingdom and Europe.
So it's the trade agreement.
The act of leaving is what was agreed last year. And as part of the act of leaving, there was 1 year where the UK would be out of the EU and have no vote. So, I mean, the UK has not been at the European Parliament, has not been voting on anything, but is still in the common trade area for one more year. And that expires on the end of this year. So the trade deal is needed to be ready when that 1 year of leeway is over.
So the Brexit is done, and the whether or not it's a hard Brexit is what is being discussed now. And Johnson said, well, we want to ignore what? What was he going to ignore?
Well, I'll just add to what Bart was saying. What was actually additionally to what was agreed in October last year was a sort of framework to say, well, we are agreeing in good faith that these certain things will be in line when we do the trade deal proper. And this involved, and I tried to look it up, but this involved several caveats around Northern Ireland and the borders there. And now what's being changed, and this is the big issue with breaking the law, is they're saying, well, we've signed that agreement, which was a treaty in effect, and now they are going back and saying, no, we're not going to honour that treaty. We want a deal that wasn't agreed back then, that goes against what we agreed. So that's the issue right now.
So
as far as I can see,
the deal on how the UK would be out of the EU is what he's saying we're not going to honor that. I'm sure there are details that...
A part of. So, like, I mean, the UK are out. Like, Brexit happened in January. The United Kingdom are not members of the European Union.
So that's why I'm not sure what he can ignore. Like, that,
okay, but
that
there was
is done.
Part of that treaty was that there would exist a sort of a... that Northern Ireland would have one foot in and one foot out of the European common market. So there would be customs arrangements such that anything going from Ireland to mainland UK would be treated as a normal leaving the EU, you're now a third country transaction. But anything purely staying on the island of Ireland, so from the Republic of Ireland to the north or from the north to the Republic, that would be allowed to go freely. And then there would be, so effectively you have half the border control between the north and the Republic and half the border control between the north and the UK. And that was a fudge because no one could agree to have a border in the Irish Sea because the unionists would go absolutely crazy because that's like, but you're putting us outside the United Kingdom. Mm. And no one wanted a hard border on the land of Ireland because it's really, really not designed for that. Like, it's a very, very, very artificial border, like we talked about before. There's more crossing points in that tiny border than the whole border between Finland and Norway. So no one wanted it there. So it's basically half and half in both places. And what Boris Johnson has given himself the right to do is to not bother with the half border in the Irish Sea on a whim.
Okay.
Yeah, so just to
be exposed.
He's basically said the EU can deal with any fallout from any border issues. It's not our problem.
Oh, okay. Basically. So, okay, I see. Yeah.
If they want to put a border in the land border.
Yeah, they've got to deal with it. They've got to put up the border. We're not doing it. Basically, it's not as easy. Simple
Alex?
As
Alex? Yeah, the one thing to add as well, before basically for this to be changed, the EU and the UK governments had to agree bilaterally on the changing this or removing this. What Boris Johnson effectively did was set up so that the UK can on their own, so unilaterally, go ahead and remove this agreement from the clause without the EU's consent, which they couldn't get beforehand in the negotiations, which they've gone ahead and added now afterwards.
Okay.
So now the UK can pull the plug on this whenever they want on the UK side, according to the UK law.
And that has been signed. That has been voted on.
Yeah, and the bit that they're trying, that Boris is trying to get rid of, was really hard negotiated.
Of course, yeah, that was the crux. I remember we spent essentially four episodes talking about how the situation in Northern Ireland was going to be handled, and the most of those I didn't understand, and I still don't.
But the key point here, the compromise was that in order for this special position of Northern Ireland to end, Northern Ireland could decide to pull the plug. So that was the compromise. It wasn't that Britain could unilaterally leave, or that the EU could unilaterally leave. The power to say, no, we're done, rested with Northern Ireland, which was the place where it really matters. So that was really hard negotiated to get it to the point where neither side would have unilateral power apart from Northern Ireland. And Boris, who couldn't get that in a negotiation, has just basically said, Asher, I'll write it in Westminster law and pretend that somehow supersedes an international treaty.
Gareth,
I find all of this quite interesting.
I don't know. It seems completely it seems pretty insane. And looking at it from the outside, I'm extremely confused as to how does one. There are two ways of looking at it. I think about Donald Trump a lot in those situations, because if you really look hard, you can see a hardball negotiator, right? You could think, well, this is going to lead to something that we couldn't have gotten without that kind of baffling move. Honestly, I think this is a very generous interpretation of the situation. It seems like given the past record, there's a lot of flailing about. And sometimes if you squint really hard in the right position, you're like, oh, but that could be what it means. But I don't know, Gareth, are you as... Because you're the... I'm going to quiet down. You're the person who we can turn to and say, all right, you wanted the Brexit. And clearly no one wanted all of this to be as complicated as it was. But how does this look to you?
Okay, so I'm going to caveat what I'm about to say with I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit. So what I say now, I do not necessarily 100% agree with.
All right.
Basically, stop me being burned to death on Twitter.
that's a wonderful way to set it up. But
so I think that a good part of the we want to be out of the EU was around the ability for us to make our own laws and rules. So to a certain extent, I think we're looking at this and saying, well, you know, we don't like this agreement. So we no longer agree with it. Yes,
that makes perfect sense. Sovereignty has always been a big thing in this.
Yeah.
No, of course it does. But it's also like, if I tell you we're going to shake hands on the agreement that, you know, I don't insult you and you don't insult me, and then you turn around and you're like, well, I'm going to be able to insult you. I understand that you have the, you know, not the right, but it's like, it's, you're still breaking an agreement and you're coming back on your word. Like, sorry, absolutely. please keep going.
No. And I think, you know, that's perfectly reasonable. I think that you would then, if, you know, if we had made that agreement and I then turned around and started calling you all sorts of names, then you would realize that maybe I'm not as trustworthy as you thought I was, or maybe
right. The
next time we made an agreement, you might have to say, well, I need to think about the fact that maybe this agreement doesn't get upheld. And I don't necessarily want to be living in a country that is looked at in that kind of light. But I think that partially explains maybe what's going on. And the other thing is, and others may be able to correct me on this, but my understanding is that there are several things that we've said we would agree in principle, and I forget the exact terminology that was used, but we would agree in principle that these five or six things would be part of the deal. And we're now saying, actually, we've looked at this a bit further and we're not happy with, and the things that I've got to mind are fishing rights and free movement and border controls. There were another couple of things, but I think we had agreed in principle that these things would remain as they are currently. Oh, the food regulations. That was another, you know, keeping food regulations in line with the EU. And there are several things like that we're now looking at and saying, well, actually, we're not entirely sure that we do want to stick to what we were doing. But because if we do stick to what we were doing, then where was the point in us leaving?
Well, I mean, I don't think the point of leaving is to systematically change everything you were doing. Like, surely some of the things were, you know, not to your liking, but also some of the things were okay, right? You're not going to, on principle, systematically change everything just because you want to change them, all of them. But
no, and I don't necessarily think that we are changing everything. I think it's just the things that we are choosing to change. Yeah, and again, you know, I'm so fed up of mainstream media and the way that they deal with a lot of this sort of stuff, because they're picking up on something which might not be a particularly big issue. It's going to be a big issue to certain people, and it gets blown up out of all proportions. And actually, there might be a perfectly sensible, perfectly legitimate solution to the problem.
Can I ask what that issue is? Sorry, what issue is being blown out of proportion, do you feel, that the media is doing?
Oh, well, that's a general comment about the media as a whole. It's
right.
Not necessarily about Brexit specifically.
I will. I can sense the eyes rolling in the audience and maybe in the panel, and I'm going to defend Gareth on this a little bit. The extent to which I don't like the term mainstream media, because it's not like the people contesting all of this aren't mainstream as well. There are a lot of people that make a lot of money out of just being in the opposition of everything and contesting it and continuing that climate of anger that is generated maybe on social media, but maybe somewhere else. But, okay, all that being said, the way media, and especially 24 hours news media, covers some things is infuriating. And I have become, not infuriating, that's a strong word, but is frustrating.
No,
and
Patrick, it is infuriating. I will defend you on that strong word, because it's the same half-baked cliche that you just see trotted out by lazy people over and over again.
Yep. I'll agree with you there, Patrick. Mm. I'll agree with you too, I think. But I don't like the term mainstream media, because it sort of, it can be used as a coverall for everything, whereas I think different media outlets have very, very different leanings, and and you can read a lot into what they're saying. You know, if we look at Guardian versus Telegraph readers in the UK, there's they're both mainstream media, but they're two very, very different political views.
And it's not just the political view, it's also an approach to truthfulness. So you have some media outlets who would be classed as mainstream who make a point of always publishing a correction when they mess up. Some of them take great care about being factually correct. They may have an opinion, but that opinion is bolstered by facts they care about verifying. And others who are also mainstream media are all about the opinion, and the facts are secondary, if not tertiary. So it's not a monolith. And just slapping it on, a lot of people read you, therefore you're rubbish, is not helpful.
Maybe mainstream media was a bad term for me to use. I think we are, other than that, we are in agreement. just maybe not on the term I used to describe the.
I think though we jumped on that term, and I certainly feel a little bit, I don't know, attacked at the same time as I'm agreeing with you, Gareth. But I think the even more important aspect of what you're saying is, you know, all four of us are still like rabid dogs, you know, dissecting every part of what Boris Johnson said, and why did he say this, and oh, he can't do that, and he's like, maybe not like rabid dogs, but I mean, we're certainly upset about it.
I don't quite agree with what you're saying there.
Okay. Neither do I.
I will say that we are upset by the situation. It does seem like Gareth is more checked out than upset. And I'm wondering if this isn't, obviously this is just one example, it's very, you know, limited empirical evidence, but I'm wondering if this isn't a sentiment that we maybe can see in the camp of the people who were told, you know what, we're going to leave the EU, it's all going to be great, we're going to be an independent, strong country, and it's going to be very simple, and all of the shit came out of that situation, and they're like, but what? And everyone's running around, flailing their arms in the air, screaming at every little detail in the mainstream media, and they're like, all right, you know what, F all of you, do whatever, I was asked a question, I voted, as is my right, F you, whatever. Is Gareth? What do you think?
I think there's a grain of truth in what you're saying there.
Okay, I'll take a grain of truth these days.
I'm not sitting here thinking, yeah, F all of you. It's definitely not quite that, but it is very much a. You know, I'm looking at things and saying, they're making a trade agreement. It's going to take some time. There are going to be problems. There are going to be setbacks. And the fact that we are potentially breaking international law, if that's actually what's happening here, is not good. But I'm still not exactly clear on the fact that that is or is not happening, or whether we're just interpreting a line in a treaty differently to how the EU are.
I think having John Major come out and say, oh my God, what are you doing? This is not how you do international negotiations.
They themselves agreed and said, oh yes, we are breaking the law in a very specific and limited way. That was their exact words. One of the ministers. Interrupted you.
I have been preventing you from speaking for a few minutes. Go ahead, Bruce. And then we'll go to Bart, who has been interrupted.
Sorry, Bart. I just wanted to ask Gareth, when he was talking about, well, we've talked about mainstream media, but would you say the BBC are biased one way or another? How do you feel about them?
I've always felt that the BBC were the most... I don't really know what the term is, most reliable, least biased, most centred of all of the sort of news organisations that I've ever really looked at. I've always gone to BBC News on the TV. If I want a news story from the web, I will go to the BBC website. But I am becoming more of the opinion that they are doing the same as lots of other media outlets and picking at specific things and as I say, blowing things up and making things bigger than they are, and not necessarily backing everything up with actual hard facts.
Okay. I'm just from the other side, my view on the BBC is very much that they have swung very hard to the right in the past few years. And in fact, they are not raising the issues that need to be raised. And that's my view. So it's interesting, you know, how we're viewing the same media outlet. Mm. We can read into that how you want. Yeah. You know, maybe my political view has changed, or maybe the BBC has changed. I don't know. So you know, I just wanted to ask that quickly.
No, that's an interesting one. Mm. I think we need slow news. I think we don't need 24 hours news. I think we need...
Yeah.
No, you don't, Patrick, right? So I'm going to give everyone a tip on terms of getting some news. So it does have the letters BBC in it, but it has one very important word after that. BBC World Service. BBC World. They do twice a day, half-hour updates on the world's news. So they stick to the facts, right? It is... Half an hour to cover the whole of planet Earth means you're not getting all of the political intrigue. You're not getting the horse race coverage. What you're getting is what happened and what, you know, what happened, not what we think or what you think. And the great thing with the World Service is the journalists who report on India are in India. The journalists who report on South America are in South America. And frankly, they give a very outsider's view of UK news because their audience is the world, not the UK. And whenever they cover Ireland, they do an amazingly good job, which tells me that when they cover other countries, they're probably doing as good of a job.
All right. BBC News, BBC News World, BBC World Service, what? World News Service?
So, yeah, so the BBC have the domestic arm, which is
content. No, I'm just asking for the name again.
So BBC World, they have a podcast, I think it's called BBC World. Just basically it's twice a day. It's a half hour podcast. It comes out twice a day to catch you up on the world news every 12 hours, basically. So midday and midnight.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the two things I sort of wanted to get to in terms of our actual discussion, right? So the things that are causing hold up in the trade negotiations we're hearing so little from, on the one hand, they sound like very minor stuff, right? Fisheries, food regulations. But again, for Northern Ireland and Ireland, they're massively important. It needs to be possible for a farmer who lives on the border to sell his milk on either side of that border, for a cheese factory to get milk from both sides. It really, really matters. Like, Ireland is an agricultural country. Northern Ireland is an agricultural country. So food regulation isn't some pilfering little thing. Food regulation is vital to the economy of Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And if the regulations are vastly different on the island, it is economically massively damaging. The fisheries, on the other hand, seems to me to be a very, very small tail trying to wag a massive dog. We're overfishing our oceans to the point that they're going to have no fish in them very soon. So I guess that problem will go away. But it is, for reasons I don't quite understand, the fishery lobby have massive power. Mm. And I don't understand it because they control our government too.
Alex?
Yeah, I wasn't meaning to belittle any of the decisions that need to be made, just for the record. It was more there's Brexit is the big thing. There's the trade negotiations is then a smaller part of Brexit. And then there's each of the individual parts of the trade agreement are then even smaller bits of the bigger. Sorry, I'll stop talking and Alex carry on.
No. I think this is really important what you're saying and what Bart was saying. Everything seems small to someone and is super vital to someone else, you know, and it can be blown up to be something that will be the end of the world to some people. And if you go ask them, this is unacceptable. And at the same time, since everything can be important to someone, if you listen to everyone and there's always going to be someone who says it's the end of the world, you can't make any decision about anything. It's kind of like when you ask something on social media, there's always someone that's going to disagree with you. And so sometimes you do have to ignore the thing that seems like it's going to be the end of the world for some people. Now, of course, if you're talking about, you know, agriculture in a country that's mainly whose economy is mainly agricultural, that's obviously important. But yeah, sorry, Alex, what are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I can see what you mean around some of these things, around the discussions and stuff. Because like for me personally, the fisheries policies, for me, that has no personal impact whatsoever. And it's always weird to see how that's been. It's almost like I'm not sure, it's like a patriotic thing, you know? We got to protect our fisheries, we got to protect our fishermen and stuff.
Well, it is, yeah.
It's very riled up in the British news, it feels. I always when I see it, I'm a bit questioning, like, okay, but how much of our economy really is made up of that? And maybe I'm wrong on that entirely, but for me personally, I could question how it has such a large impact, at least the UK side anyway.
The fishing thing, and we could do a whole podcast on the fishing thing, but I think it's very much a red herring in that, yes, it's a big thing, but it's not the EU that's ever been a problem with it. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I think the UK has had quite a few issues around fisheries, etc. and stuff. We're kind of like a big roadblock for Europe and getting out into the good fishing spots, it seems, for the most part, where we're positioned.
All right, let's
Patrick,
go.
Can I just throw in one final thought on the Boris thing?
Yes, and I think that's going to be our last piece of conversation because I don't know that we have much more to say. But go ahead, Bart.
Okay, so from my point of view, right? So I'm not in the UK; I'm on the outside. And from my point of view, I'm a very pragmatic person. Brexit has happened; it's almost a year old. Mm. So I don't care about, oh, they shouldn't have left. Doesn't matter. Gone. Done. Finished. What matters to me is that we have a good neighbor next door who we can get on with and who we can continue to have a positive relationship with. So the reason the legislation troubles me so much is that it's so hard to see how it isn't shooting yourself in the foot. Because if you do that to the EU negotiation, then the Americans are obviously watching. Nancy Pelosi was very quick to say she was watching. The Canadians are watching. The Japanese are watching. So the whole point of Brexit was to have the freedom to have all of these amazing trade deals. But all of those deals are international treaties. And so how do you start the process of negotiating with the entire planet by saying, yeah, whatever we negotiate with you, we won't stick to and we don't feel bound to and we're perfectly happy not to. You know, an agreement isn't an agreement in our mind. And that, like, how do you end up with a strong United Kingdom if no one in the world trusts them? And that's why I'm so worried about it.
Yeah, just to add to that, there's a beautiful layer of kind of hypocrisy to this, in that Boris Johnson's reasoning was to give a safety net if the EU was acting unreasonable. And in this case, the UK is acting unreasonable. I just found that ultimately hypocritical, just to add in there.
Yeah, and I think it's not great. it's not how I want my country to be viewed by the rest of the world, and I don't think it's how the majority of the country I live in is. You know, so sorry, world.
I think. What do you guys think the Brexiter camp is thinking about this? Is it like, well, we have to do it to make sure we're in a strong position, or is it more in line with what you were saying, Bart? Is, well, this seems illogical and somewhat unreasonable.
The fact that you have former prime ministers from the same party, I mean, obviously, I would expect a former Labour prime minister to criticize a current Tory prime minister, but John Major is an extremely, I mean, I always thought it was to his credit. He's an extremely boring man. He never courted controversy. He never courted fame. He was a real pragmatic nerd prime minister, and I loved him for it. Even though I'm very much not conservative, I still loved him for it. But for him to come out and be so, to do an act as unusual for a former Tory prime minister to criticize the current Tory prime minister, tells you how seriously he takes it. Because him, of all people, to be this interesting is difficult. Mm. If anyone remembers Spitting Image, interesting is not what they liked to describe him as.
Okay. I want to leave the last word to Gareth, because as always, he's very brave to be coming on this show, and he's the opinion that I'm... Sometimes they go together. But yeah, so any last thing you want to say before we close off the show?
Yeah, so I think I don't know whether this is directly relevant or not, but I have this little thing that I keep in my head a lot of the time, which is that you should never attribute to malice something which could otherwise be described as stupidity.
That's called Hanlon's razor. I love it.
Yeah,
I am such a fan of that.
Yeah, I always keep that in mind whenever I'm having any conversation with anybody, basically. But also to remember that, and using the food standards as an example. Sorry, get my words out. Just because we've said we will not necessarily stick to the EU standards doesn't mean that we will throw them completely to the wind and completely trash everything. So, again, I think this is one of the things where things get lost. It's like saying, well, we're not going to stick to the standards exactly. Mm. We will allow, I don't know, unpasteurized milk to be sold to minors or something like that, you know, but actually everything else will remain exactly the same.
Mm.
And I understand that's not necessarily going to be the case. There's this whole thing about chlorinated chicken from the US, and whether that's a good thing, a bad thing, or another thing. But I think it's important to remember that whilst we are saying we won't necessarily stick to it, that doesn't mean that we're going to throw everything away and start again.
Well, yeah, let's hope that not everything is thrown away. That's a good way to end this one. This is the fifth episode of the Brexit saga. I think the title is going to be The Kerfuffle. I think it works.
It's a perfect word. I mean, kerfuffle just invokes tousle-haired blonde prime ministers to me.
Kerfuffle most of the time. I'll say that much.
All right, let's end the show here. Would you mind telling us where we can find you on the internet? Let's go with Bart, who is very active.
Well, the easiest thing to do is to go to bartb.ie, where you'll find links to the various podcasts I do. Let's Talk Apple, Let's Talk Photography. Oh, I have an ebook out, and I didn't even have to write it myself, which is wonderful. So I've done a series with a wonderful podcaster called Alison Sheridan called Taming the Terminal. And because it was all open source, behind my back, Alison and a listener from Holland, Dr. Helma, they made it into an ebook, and it's now available in the Apple bookstore, Taming the Terminal. So that's kind of cool.
Excellent. Fantastic. And of course, for you, as for everyone else who has a Twitter presence, the link will be in the show notes. Let's go to Gareth. Do you have a thing you want to plug?
Yes, so you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Gareth Westwood. Please be gentle. And I do occasionally throw videos up on YouTube. They're very, very techie, IT sort of related ones. But that's with the company's Quietly Confident Technology.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Alex, what about you?
I'm still pretty much a social media recluse at this point. However, if you do want to get hold of me, you can find me in the Patreon Discord to talk to me as well, if you're in there.
Actually, the Patreon Discord is, the Discord in general has a public section and a private section for some of the patron levels, but it's accessible. It has a public section accessible to everyone, and you can find the link at notpatrick.com. There's a link to the Patreon there. It's primarily a French language Patreon, but French language Discord, but you can definitely find the English sections over there as well.
If you want me, come throw me a message in there.
Just what? Sorry?
I said come throw me a message in there if you want me. It's Alexander.
What about you, Bruce?
My Twitter will be in the show notes. And I just wanted to add that I always thought Brexit was the worst conjunction or word ever, but that's been beaten this year, and I think Patrick will know one it is. Yeah, BlizzConline, please.
BlizzConline is terrible. my reaction
is terrible.
It's so BlizzCon.
The word is horrible.
The word is horrible for sure. Do you not know what it is, Bart?
No, I'm not. This is news to me.
BlizzCon is the Blizzard convention that was happening every year around November, which obviously is not happening. Blizzard, you know, the video game developer. Yeah. And it's not happening this year. And they decided to do an online version, which is going to be happening in February. And it's going to be called BlizzConline. And I hate that name with more hate than should be reasonable. I'm like... You don't have to be clever all the time about everything. Just call it BlizzCon Online. It's fine. Just don't. Ugh. Anyway, yes. Thank you.
And I want to leave with a recommendation and a request. The recommendation is a podcast on BBC World and BBC Online. It's called More or Less. And they go through the numbers, and they are fantastic. And they also have little sections on BBC World that made me think of it. It sounded like you like that, Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And the request is, Patrick, when are you going to have another all-female podcast? An update to the one, because that was by far, aside from the ones we're doing, by far the best episode
I will. I will do my best to do that again at some point. I also want to do an update on parenting because things have changed. So
yes,
we'll think about that.
Yes.
But until then, I'm Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find all the links at notpatrick.com, and you can support the show at the Phileas Club. No, at patreon.com/thePhileasClub. If you wish to support it financially, it would be very much appreciated. I thank you all who already do, and I thank all the ones who are considering doing it. Thanks a lot. This is the fifth episode of the Brexit saga, and I'm pretty sure we're going to have more coming at some point. It's never over, apparently. Talk to you soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.